Welcome to the Painting Insights podcast. We have been working on something in the background.
That's right. We've actually started a Patreon channel. For the last couple of months, we've had previous guests revisit the channel to give us additional content, everything from studio tours, sketchbook tours, talking us through the process of paintings, and all kinds of additional treats, which you're exclusively going to see as a patron who supports the channel.
So by supporting us on Patreon, you help the channel keep going. There's a lot of work put into this, from the video editing to the sourcing of guests. So you really help us find those guests and to put the content out.
And we have lots of content planned for the near future. So the links for that will be in the description of this video and in the description on the podcast channels. And otherwise, you can go on to Patreon and type in Painting Insights Podcast and support us that way. Thanks very much. Enjoy the video. So, would you mind introducing yourself for the audience, please?
My name is Jack Hewitt. I'm a figurative portrait painter from East London.
Fantastic. And how long have you been making art as a profession?
Not very long at all. A few years, maybe 3 years, something like that.
That's all. And before that, you were a student. Is that where you were?
Well, I was a student, but not of art. I actually did film. I worked in cinematography and a camera department sort of stuff, and did a bit of photography as well before getting into painting.
So, how did that adjustment happen between cinematography and painting?
I think I have to credit it entirely to COVID, actually, because I was freelance. There was no work as soon as lockdown started. I'd always drawn my whole life. And I kind of just put all my energy into drawing. Then it became painting. And I just liked, I don't know, I liked the independence, I think. Not really having to rely on other people, like you do on a film set. And the turnaround is so much faster. You want to like start a film project. First of all, you need money, you need a lot of people. And then it's like a year down the line and you've done nothing. And painting and drawing is much more immediate, and I think maybe I'm just an impatient person, but it suits me. Suits me a lot better, I think.
Yeah. Is there a shared visual language that you're using to make paintings that you would have made with film, or is it quite a different visual
I
texture?
think definitely it's bled through. I was really obsessed with certain photographers and cinematographers, and I think their style of visual storytelling and composition certainly have definitely left a big mark on the way I choose to do things. I think I did a painting quite recently, which was it was a portrait, just like shoulders up, but it was in that kind of, not the traditional portrait mode. It was in the landscape mode, and yeah, it really reminded me of my kind of photography days, for sure.
So, is there anyone that we'd know of? Is there anyone you should maybe as far as, is there any films out that you think this director or this cinematographer is specifically
Yeah, I
impactful?
think it was always Roger Deakins, one of the most well-known, of course. But yeah, I was really, really obsessed with his work for a long time. And actually, I kind of, from reading into him, I found he was very much inspired by Alex Webb. I don't know if you know Alex Webb, a
I don't.
photographer. He's a
No.
magnum photographer. I have a book of his here, actually. Just incredible, all like street photography style, totally candid. Just kind of walk around. These places, lots in South America, Africa, the US. But I think he's a big influence of Deakins and certainly of mine as well.
Yeah. And is it a similar framing of the composition, or is it the subject? How does it relate, do you think, to
I
your?
think it's definitely the composition, but also the light. He's Alex Webb is very much into the silhouette, and you see that a lot in Deakins' work as well. Yeah.
So how do you find your models for your work?
It's all they're all my family, friends. Yeah, I like to keep things as close to home and to me as possible, I think. think for a long time I was always like, I don't know, kind of looking at what I could be doing, I suppose, as opposed to like what I have immediately in front of me. Hard to put it into words, but yeah, I think, who is it? Is it Bonnard? Do you know Pierre Bonnard, I think? Or is it Villiers? One of the two. One of the two just started painting his like wife and his cat in the house. I think I really admire that.
And if you were making film, would it be kind of very contained things like that, or do you go for a more grand storytelling? What would be your preference there?
I think it would have to be a smaller and kind of smaller scale story-wise. I think the things I like the most are always the simplest. Not super into like big kind of elaborate, CGI, million characters, a million like, I don't know, spaceships, whatever. Just simple stories with like a few characters in a room. Like you can do so much with that.
Absolutely. And it's, I mean, I might be wrong, but I feel as though your work explores kind of deep contemplation and even mental health. Is that something which rings true with you?
Definitely contemplation. I think there's always something going on in that character's head, and it's always so. I actually work mostly from photography. I just take photos of my family when they're not looking, really. I just kind of sneak a photo in, and it's always those kind of moments in between, but there's no specific kind of action or kind of motivation of a character, like you see in a lot of physical work. Like they're not really doing anything. They're just kind of sitting there thinking a lot of the time. I think I'm trying to kind of make the most of that kind of quiet time that we have to ourselves. So yeah, it's definitely, yeah, contemplation, I think, is the word there.
There was a mechanism, I can't remember what the name of it is, which Alfred Hitchcock used, where he would have an actor have a blank expression or something, and then the audience will project onto that actor an interpretation, and it would be based on the previous cut, from each edit. Do you find that happens with your work as well? Have you had exhibitions where side by side they may communicate something differently? Similarly to how Hitchcock's work does, it makes people interpret emotions differently, perhaps, than they would on its own.
Well, I've never actually exhibited more than one painting at a
Really?
time. So I've never had that opportunity to kind of have that kind of larger body of work with a through line. You know, it's always been just group shows so far.
I see.
Yeah. But there is definitely a through line. I think it was kind of linking to the contemplation thing. It was always about memory, I think, for me. Painting, I was trying to kind of describe memory through portraiture, and that was done a lot more in the kind of in the way it was constructed and the kind of aesthetics of the painting, as opposed to the sitter specifically. Like there's a lot of kind of blurred kind of lines and broken up forms that are kind of hinting at this way that we reconstruct moments from the past in our head. Like they're never a whole picture. There's always something that's kind of fragmented.
Yeah, I've noticed that this a kind of illusion of unfinished, but I think it's that you've resolved the piece, but it's not finished for every corner of the portrait, which is nice because again, it shows a confidence in what you're doing and a strength in the impact of the image. And that's a conscious effort, or is it ability to just say, I can leave it now? And is that something you've learned, or where does
I
that
think
come?
it's maybe a product of learning when to stop, but also I love just those moments of like looseness, and I really like leaving those first kind of strokes that you make that are, they're a lot looser. You're not really thinking as much. Big brushes and just kind of having them bleed through in the final thing. And I really like the way it contrasts with the more refined parts of the paintings. Because I feel like my face is always like the most, they're the most refined part. And then as you kind of expand outwards, it's getting a lot more kind of abstract and ambiguous. Yeah. And unfinished is maybe one way to look at it as well. Could just be laziness again.
Well, it's a good point to start being lazy because you've captured all of the important elements. So that's a really nice aspect. And because you mentioned big brushes, I'm wondering, do you go from big to small? Is that because that's usually a technique that I see quite successfully?
Yeah, I do. I try not to approach everything the same, I think. I don't know, maybe I just haven't found my preferred way of approaching things yet, but generally, yeah, big brushes, dark shapes first, and you kind of work up to the lights and get smaller with the brushes. I do think I have a bad habit of going for smaller brushes too quick and kind of losing that, yeah, sense of the whole, I think. But it's just can be frustrating to not be at that point yet. When you're first starting out a painting and it like it doesn't really look like what you want it to look like, and you think like, I'm just gonna get in there with a small brush and then really render out this like nose or this eye, and then it will be good. But usually what happens is it just doesn't look quite right, and you just have to stick with the bigger shapes and just get smaller and smaller very slowly until it fits together. Which is quite frustrating for me.
I don't know if you know the artist James Gurney, but he talks about how it's not only learning to see, it's learning to see through what you see in order to get those basic shapes, and the trick of squinting or closing your eyes in order to get the higher contrast shapes first. And that is a difficult part, and how much detail you want to put in. But yeah, so I'm guessing that light is a big factor in what you're trying to capture as well, as far as atmosphere, because there's a lot of atmosphere in what you make in your paintings. So does light play a huge part in how you set the scene?
Yeah, I think light is the first thing I notice. Yeah, so I have again, like most of my paintings are from photos of my mom, my dad, my sister, or myself just in the house. If I see some light that's just striking one of them in a way that's interesting, I'm drawn to it. I think that's what it's all about for me.
No, it's great work, and you do really nice drawings as well. I love how you have a sketchbook which shows the drawing before you develop the painting, and it shows your experimentation as well in the drawing work. Does it feel like, because you said that you haven't necessarily solidified a technique that you repeat, is there quite a bit of experimentation in the production of the paint as well?
Yeah, for sure. I think I used to, when I first started, I was so harsh with like, I have to do three studies. I have to do a sketch, I have to do an oil study, and then do one slightly bigger. And only then can I move on to the final thing. I think now I'm just kind of going for it without the studies a lot of the time. I always do a drawing, pencil drawing first, because I like to transfer, do an oil transfer. Actually, I have one, I think. Mean, this is like just a printout of a drawing from my sketchbook. You can kind of see
Oh
it's
yeah, you can just
bit,
see that. Oh, very
yeah.
nice.
But you, yeah, but I like, yeah, pencil drawing first and sketchbook, always quite small, like A4 size, and I just scan it and then blow it up to however big it needs to be, and work like that.
So when you mentioned earlier about how you always drew, even when you were doing studying filmmaking, would that be something, would you draw storyboards, or would that just be part of how you worked out scenes, or was it completely separate? How was the drawing
Yeah,
related?
I mean, drawing, I always just have drawn constantly, any kind of downtime. So it would have been in lectures, just doodling, just sketching, anything. Yeah, doing a lot of storyboards. I really enjoyed that. I was looking into that as a career path as well, but it's not really such a like as big a thing these days. I think it's mostly like 3D renders and that sort of way of approaching it. But then I would always draw in my downtime as well. Always have a sketchbook on the train. Yeah, I've always just tried to make it part of my routine, I think.
Yeah. And is it always pencil or do you use pen sometimes to draw, or is it?
It's exclusively, it always has been exclusively pencil, yeah. Never really like I did a lot of biro when I was at school. But pencil, and I've never really liked charcoal. I've never got along with it.
Hmm.
I don't know, I can't seem to make it look right. I don't know.
Yeah. Can be a bit more unwieldy, I suppose, and it
Yeah.
seems that with the pencil, you've got quite a bit of precision where you're trying to communicate distortion
Yeah.
as opposed to letting the materials dictate. That's
Yeah.
what I'd say.
I think it's a lot more delicate, I think. Whereas charcoal is like, I don't know, I feel like I'm scraping into a rock on a wall or something, you know, and it's just going to be there forever.
So with, I mean, is it oil that you paint in, yeah?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah, exclusively oil. Yeah.
So, yeah. Has it always been the case, or did you try other media and didn't fancy it?
I think, remember at A level art, I was using acrylics,
Yeah.
but that's probably the last time I used them. I just went straight in for the oil.
And is there a specific company that you've got a preference for?
I try not to be like too reliant on certain brands to be able to achieve what I want to do, but I think I do like Michael Harding's paint the most, which is annoying because it's quite expensive. But I've used like the Winsor and Newton, like the cheap ones, for a long time when I started out, and they're great. I don't think my painting has gotten better for switching brands at all. I
No.
think maybe just don't know, the tubes are a bit nicer as well. Nicer font, maybe
Do
that's
you
it.
think it's just branded? I always think it's more pigment rich than Michael
Yeah,
Harding.
no, it definitely is. But I think I just don't like admitting to myself that I'm definitely in favor of a certain brand, you know.
Yeah.
Because if they suddenly stop producing, like, am I gonna be a terrible painter now? Because I can't get that paint.
Yeah. No, that's fair. But is it the same with brushes? Do you just use whatever brushes, or do you find that certain ones are just more reliable and you don't lose bristles and things like that?
This is really weird. I was talking about this with a friend yesterday. My favorite brushes and the ones that I've had for the longest were the cheapest, like hog bristle brushes I could find on Amazon that were made in China. They've not splayed at all in, I don't know, like 3 years. And I
Wow.
bought some like nice Da Vinci hog bristle brushes that have lasted me like three paintings, and then they're just like totally splayed out. So I don't know. I didn't seem to have good luck with brushes. I actually just bought about eight brushes yesterday, the first time in I think a year. I've been trying not to rely on having good materials too much because most of my brushes are quite messed up at the moment. It's a fun challenge, I think.
I'm going to be interested in getting a link for that hog bristle brushes and try them myself.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to find them.
Yeah,
Yeah.
need to try those. You've painted at one chap a few times with a saxophone. Is that a friend of yours?
Oh, I think that was John Coltrane. That was a John Coltrane painting I did.
Was it?
Yes, that was quite a while ago. Yeah. I think I was just one. Yeah.
I thought I saw him a couple of times, one where he
There's one of a
played.
piano player as well.
Okay. Because I
Yeah.
thought there was a side profile where it was, because there's one where it's front on and he's not playing the saxophone, it's just there. He's got his arm up. And there was one, I'm just scrolling now to see if I can see it. I thought I saw one where there was smoke or something coming up. I thought that
Yeah,
was a
there's a
saxophone.
black and white one, which is a, excuse me, of a pianist, Ahmad Jamal.
Oh, okay.
Jazz pianist. I'm a big music nerd and very much drawn to that kind of that 50s, 60s photography style that captured those kind of amazing jazz musicians in that era. It's just me kind of being a bit of a nerd, I think, you know.
No, it's got a certain aesthetic, hasn't it? Like it's an amazing time capsule for that period. And is that what you listen to whilst you paint, or is it because some people need specific sounds when they paint to get in that mood?
Yeah, interestingly, I've not really found anybody else who does this too, but I just put my earphones in with nothing on. So it's like I can't hear anything at all. And a lot of people think that's really weird. But I love just the pure focus of the painting in front of me and nothing else. I'm in a total bubble, which is really nice. Because for me, I think music is too influential on my state of mind and my mood. And I think I would constantly be stopping to look at my phone to like skip this song, or I haven't heard this one before. What was that? Let me rewind it. That sort of thing. So yeah, I find it just takes me out of it, music. Rather keep it a separate thing. And also, the studio I'm in is shared as well. And there's a lot of other, it's a huge building. There's a lot of other people and there's a lot of noise as well. There's a lot of distractions. My studio neighbors, who I hope don't see this, are really, really chatty. I don't really know what they do except for chat all day. It's constant. And the radio is always on. It's always like Radio One pop hits. It's always George Michael, that sort of thing. And it's not really conducive to my contemplative paintings. I think it might be the opposite of that, in fact.
Yeah, that wouldn't work for me either, I don't think. So I can
No.
understand now why you're blocking out all of the outside distractions. And how long would you spend on a painting on average? Because sometimes it can be several sessions, but I'm wondering if that's the case with you. Do you have several passes on there?
I think three is the sweet spot for me. Any more than that, and I think it often feels a bit overworked. That's not to say that less is underworked. If I could do it in one hit, then that would be great, but I don't think I can work that way. There's a few on my page on my website that are a la prima. But I do really enjoy working on top of a dried paint layer and building up texture really slowly. Yeah, it's really, I don't know what it is about painting on top of oil paint. It just feels so much nicer. It's quite exciting getting to that stage. I often find I tend to rush the block in just so I can leave and let it dry and then get on to the next bit.
And do you start several paintings at the same time, or is it just one you commit to at a time?
Kind of a mixture. I think there's always something kind of on the back of the studio wall that's been sat there for way too long unfinished. So there's definitely a few that are on the go, but when they'll be picked up again is kind of TBD.
Yeah, that's fair. I suppose with you drawing as well, your composition and working out things in the sketchbook, do you find that means there's less unsuccessful paintings that you just either abandon or wipe down and start from scratch?
I think that no matter how much I prepare, I don't think you really can prepare for that day that you start. Because I've done paintings with studies where I've planned to like use these exact colors, and as soon as I start painting, I step back and look at it, and it's just like this is nothing like the study that I did, which is nice, I guess. I think for me the not preparing too much has been quite freeing, and I've had a bit of a confidence boost, I think. There's a painting of my mum with a red background that is, it's my most recent Instagram post. You can see on my page. That started out with no study. I didn't even really do it. I did a quick sketch of her face, did the transfer, Just went for it straight away. It was like really gloomy and it had this green kind of sludge background. And it totally wasn't working. And I was at the point of, I'm going to sand this down, start again. And then I thought I'd just totally rework it instead. So I stuck with it. I kind of redid the whole face. I changed the background color totally. And that's something I don't think I would have done a few years ago. So yeah, I think the confidence is definitely built a lot over the years, over the 3 years. And yeah, I'm really enjoying kind of, yeah, sticking with stuff. I haven't really sanded or wiped anything down in a while.
That's quite an interesting adjustment to go from green to red is literally the polar opposite on the color scale. So
Yeah, I really was not feeling it. It had to be polar opposite for me to continue with it.
But it's lovely painting because I love the stripes on her top as well. Give that form, and you don't have to be too descriptive. You can leave them just drifting in space, and it still gives the illusion of shape there, which is really good.
That definitely comes from Villiard, who's that's one of his paintings there. I love his the way he approaches fabric and pattern, because it's still quite naive, but you can really get a sense of the form. And that's definitely a big nod to him in that painting.
So does this come from your parents? Do any of those make art, or?
No, not really. I don't have many creatives in the family. I can't really explain it. I've just, if you ask my parents, it was the only thing I ever wanted to do was draw when I was younger. It's just always been a big part of my life, I think.
And I know we talked about this earlier, but just to quickly revisit, is there any film that's out recently where you think this really spoke to me for the filmmaking aspect and how it was shot?
I don't have my finger on the pulse with like what's out at the moment. I do like to revisit old films. I saw Andrei Rublev recently. I'm a big Tarkovsky fan as well. I think that was, yeah, it was something quite, I don't know. Yeah, it's very poetic. I mean, Tarkovsky is always poetic, especially with the way he uses the camera. I don't know. I think I've probably fallen, I wouldn't say I've fallen out of love with film, but it's definitely kind of on the back burner at this point in my life, I think. Painting has, yeah, kind of got a stranglehold on my brain for the time being.
No, that's fair. Yeah, that makes sense. And if I could, though, I would recommend if you want to fall back in love, I think The Zone of Interest is beautiful all the way through. I mean, horrifying subject matter, but very well
Zone of
portrayed.
Interest.
Jonathan Glazer's an amazing filmmaker. I don't know how familiar you are with his previous work, but The Zone of Interest is worth watching. And yeah,
Yeah,
I don't know about you. I've got, sorry, yeah.
that come out recently.
It was, yeah, last year.
Yeah, I've definitely heard of it, but no, I haven't seen it. I'm not familiar with his work either.
He made Sexy Beast, and he also made Beneath the Skin, starring Scarlett Johansson in Scotland, driving a
Oh,
van. Did you see that one?
under the
Under the
skin.
Skin.
Under the skin. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, I
It's
love that
similar
film.
to that in a weird way. The
Yeah, that's
stylistically
great.
very, yeah.
I'm sold.
That's a recommendation. But because I'm quite obsessed with cinema. I've got a Mubi subscription. I don't know if you know Mubi, the
Yeah,
yeah.
do I still have one? I might have cancelled it. I might have cancelled it. The thing is now I only have I just have my laptop to watch stuff on, and it's just not, you can't really enjoy it. I've got a membership to Prince Charles Cinema here in London. I try and go every month to see something that I haven't seen before. But it's quite tough. Yeah, there's a lot of distractions.
No, I appreciate that. And plus it's unless it's necessary, it is It's just something for enjoyment. But I do always make the excuse that it's for inspiration because I love composition of the frames for good filmmaking. And that's something which I'm wondering if are there rules that you follow when you paint, either compositional rules or color composition, or are there things that you've set as rules for yourself?
I would say there might be rules within it, but they're not, I'm not picking them consciously, I don't think. I think I try and follow instinct as much as possible, as opposed to being like, this painting has to be using the rule of thirds. I might be using it, but not even realizing. And I think, yeah, there's always the color theory is always going to be there. I can't ignore color theory because it would just look bad, probably. So it's something I'm definitely very conscious of. Again, it's not something I'm conscious of before making the painting. It kind of makes itself appear kind of at the halfway stage, I would say. And then I kind of understand what the painting I'm making is.
There's again, sorry to keep mentioning this, but I mean, going to another film, there was a film out recently, not a great film, I don't think, called The Fabelmans, about Steven Spielberg's upbringing, I think, by Steven Spielberg. I didn't really enjoy it. I don't think it was a good film, but at the very end, it has a scene featuring David Lynch. And if you watch nothing else, that scene's worth watching, even on YouTube.
Really?
Talks about
Featuring
comp.
him himself.
Sorry?
Featuring David Lynch as a character.
Yeah, as a he's not playing himself, he's playing John Waters. I might be wrong. Is that a composer? I don't know. I'm gonna have to put it on the screen now. This is gonna be terribly embarrassing. So either way. Quick correction for the audio listeners, I was thinking of John Ford. He plays this famous director, and he's talking about composition to a young Steven Spielberg, and he's saying how if you put the horizon at the top, it's interesting. If you put the horizon at the bottom, it's interesting. If you put it in the middle, it's boring. And that was the rule that he had for Steven Spielberg for his filmmaking. He said, always adjust your horizon so that you're either, got it at very low or very high. And that was something which an artist called Paul Heaston recommended that I look at or watch the film because he said that he follows that as a general rule. And there are certain things that some artists will do, like they won't use black, and some artists do use black, but only as a mixing color to kill the chroma and things like that, which are they wouldn't say as a rule, but they when they think about it, they follow it as a principle that they hold. So, do any of those ring true to you, or like putting something dead center? Some people say.
Now that you mention all those things, I do. I think I might have a lot of rules, actually. I don't. I avoid symmetry. I just think it's too obvious. There's no like, I don't know. It's very easy to just stick something in the middle. Maybe I could try doing something symmetrical that I don't dislike. But no, I'm always shoving my sitters in the furthest corner of the composition possible. And again, same as that, I don't use black. Don't use maybe in one painting recently I've used black, but I don't think I've touched it for years. It's just always to make like black, I use raw umber and ultramarine blue. And it's not like super black, but it's like, dark neutral color. Descript kind of blue, dark blue.
Is that because you can mix a black that you'd rather mix one, or is there another reason why you think black is worth avoiding?
I think it's what. Well, so this one painting I did recently, it's a self-portrait. There's like a sunflower. There's a sunflower on it. You should be able to find that page. That was the first time I've used black in a long time. And it was because I was using wax medium with the paint, and it makes it go really matte and kind of slightly lightens. And the blacks I was mixing just weren't quite dark enough. So I think I just used it straight out of the tube and just, yeah. Yeah, it was
Just got
quite
a
weird.
one.
I was like, this is black. I haven't, the blacks I've been mixing for these years with raw umber and ultramarine, they're not really black. They're so much lighter. I just couldn't believe how rich and dark it was. It's quite strange.
Yeah. But that's interesting for people to play with as well. If you mix your own black and then you put black in that dark tone, you can make shapes in the shadows and things like that, which I've seen people do quite effectively. So was the black, because looking at this painting, I wouldn't have guessed this is where you use the black. Is this the one where, am I looking at the right one where your head is back? It looks as though you're sunk into a
Yes, and
pond or
there's a
something.
sunflower kind of next to my face.
So it must be around the collar area that you're using the black, is that?
Yeah, it was all in that shirt at the bottom. And I mixed it with a little bit of yellow and blue to kind of on the edges to make it a bit more green tinted.
That's interesting, yeah. Because on the first image, it almost looks like a blue. It doesn't read as a black, which is quite an interesting way that cameras can not always understand
Yeah. Well, I think
colors.
this is ivory black, and it is definitely very blue leaning, I think. I haven't used it in a while, but yeah, it's yeah, I used to do like monochrome studies as well, going back to the studies thing, just with titanium white, ivory black, and it is they're both very, very cool. Like it's not gray, it's blue. When you mix the two, totally.
When I hear people who use a limited palette, they will replace a blue with a black sometimes, and then
Yeah, like the Zorn palette.
that's right, yeah.
Yeah, I think my palette is based on Zorn palette. I decided to, when I first started learning, to totally reduce it down to those four or five colors, whatever it is. And I've kind of just slightly tweaked it now. So, what do I have? It's titanium white, yellow ochre, ultramarine blue, cadmium red, and raw umber. Just those five colors, which is very similar to the Zorn palette. And that's pretty much the only thing I've used now for the last 2 years, I think. With the exception of like the occasional, what it's like it it's like lemon yellow or bismuth yellow or something I use if I'm painting like a banana or a sunflower or something.
Well, so was it a much larger palette before, and you've gradually reduced it?
Yeah, when I started, I didn't really know what I was doing and never had any training, so I didn't have a concept of mixing really. So it was like every color, green, purple, blah blah blah. And I didn't really realize that you could just have the primaries and just work like that. And I think you understand color so much better when you learn to mix, or at least I have. It's been a big, it's been a really good way to understand, mixing and color, just totally reducing it down. That's the I've had friends who have asked, like, do you have any tips for learning oil painting? And I've always told them to buy those, just the Zorn colors. Start as the most simple setup as possible, I think.
But you have to, I suppose, understand tonal values in order to successfully describe things with any color, really, isn't it? So that's why your monochrome, excuse me, monochromatic kind of images would have aided that development and education there, I suppose. Before I forget, you did mention that a wax medium for this painting. What was that?
It's called cold wax medium. I was looking at, so I originally I bought it for a different painting because I wanted to kind of mix the like 50% wax, just a little bit of white and raw umber, and I was going to cover this giant painting in like a really thin layer of it because the wax is trans like so translucent, and it made this painting look really foggy. I don't actually have any pictures of it, but I will do remind me and I will send you a
No,
picture of
fine.
how it looks. But it kind of puts this like translucent sheen over the painting, which creates this really beautiful atmosphere. So I did that, and then I thought, why don't I just try making a painting with the medium in the first place? It's really nice to paint with. It's really thick and kind of, I don't know how to describe it. It's kind of like ice cream. It's like painting with ice cream.
Mm.
Really interesting texture, but it kind of half dries as you're painting with it and goes matte. So you have to work quite quick in certain areas, otherwise you lose your kind of original tone. So when you varnish at the end, or when once it all dries, the colors and tones will be slightly off. Yeah, it's a strange. It's a really strange medium. I don't really work with medium otherwise. Just straight out of the tube, pretty much
Yeah.
everything. Maybe a little bit of like liquin or something if I'm doing a like a sketchbook study, but that's just because I want it to dry faster.
So with the wax, you wouldn't have linseed oil or terps or anything like that to thin it.
No, I try not to avoid terps and any spirits at all costs, really. I don't really like having them in the studio, and also because I share it, I still have a studio with three others. I don't really want that kind of hanging around in the air. And yeah, I don't, the painting with linseed oil is a bit, I don't know, it's very shiny, comes out very shiny, and I don't know, I'm very happy with it straight out of the tube. I don't think I need to alter it really. I think it maybe comes from when I first started painting. I didn't actually know how to like apply medium to the paint. I didn't really know what I was doing at all. So I just thought, screw it, I'll just do it straight out of the tube. Yeah.
So what were you back then? What were you painting? Because you still do some still life. Was it still life back then and portraiture, or did you try a bit of everything?
It was a much more a mixture of still life and portraiture. I was working almost exclusively from life at the start, so I thought that's what you have to do, and maybe it is what you have to do. It depends who you ask, really. But I'm of the school of thought that it really doesn't matter at all. It's like that endpoint's the most important thing. But yeah, lots of just little objects in my room on my desk. I think my first painting that I was like actually happy with was it's a painting of a tea bag on a teaspoon. It's a very, very simple. That's probably the most symmetrical painting I think I've done, actually. Back to the symmetry thing.
Yeah.
I think it might still be on my page somewhere if you dig down far enough. But I really like the quietness of it, and I think it's still like it feels like a painting that I would do now, which is interesting, even though it's probably 3 or 4 years old.
I found a teaspoon. Let me see. I'm just going to check because that's going to be something else I request from you. A lot of bananas. I can see that. Oh, there it is. Teaspoon and tea bag. Yeah.
Yeah,
Oh, very nice. Yeah,
that
it's
is.
dead center as well, but it does. Yeah, it's a very nice description.
Interestingly, that's painted on, I found this like postman's notebook on the street, and it was a rainy day, and it was all like brown and kind of warped and dirty and stinky, and I thought that's going to be great to paint on for some reason. I have no idea where it is now. I don't know what happened to it.
Worth finding, I think, because that is an interesting,
Yeah.
getting quite an experimental concept for a picture plane, you know, to get
Yeah.
something.
I'm very curious as to like if it would survive as long as something on linen. People are always obsessing over like this has to be archival and has to last a million years. But there's paintings like Toulouse-Lautrec. He painted on cardboard, and Giacometti painted on cardboard, and they're fine, I think.
Yeah.
Might. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how long for. I'm sure that the colors degrade. I'm not too sure. It's one of those concerns that I haven't really considered myself either. But do you think that'll change when you do more exhibition? Because if you've only exhibited one picture, is it one picture at a time, or have you only ever exhibited one picture once?
No, I've done like a handful of group shows, maybe six or something like that. But it's always been one painting in those shows.
Yeah. Have you never sought out a gallery to exhibit a body of work or?
Oh, well, that's kind of, I think what I'm focusing on now is that body of work. I'm trying to find a rhythm. I'm just trying to make as much that I feel is kind of connected. I think now the stage I'm at, I'm still not totally sure of my direction. And I think once I'm a bit more comfortable with that direction, I'll settle down, focus in on a body of work, and then exhibit it. That's the next step, I think. Yeah.
Earlier today, I interviewed a wonderful artist, Adam Taylor, who's a musician as well. And we used as a metaphor an album when he creates a body of work for an exhibition. It's like creating an album of tracks. And
Yeah.
that really made sense to him because he said that, you are trying to make them relate to each other, but also fill the spaces that other tracks wouldn't necessarily do.
See.
Similarly, do you think that your exhibition that you're trying to build this body of work could relate to scenes in a film that are somewhat telling a story,
Yeah.
if not explicitly, then implicitly.
That's not something I've ever thought about directly, but I love that. Love that notion. I really enjoy art that tells a story in a way that's not kind of too overt. But I think visual storytelling has always been the core of my work in some way. But I've never really, again, because I think I respond so much to instinct when coming up with work. I don't really think about the why until after it's done. But in the future, I think my plan is to maybe consider the through line of the work a bit more. You know, to have a concept that crosses over a body of work, whether that's through like just subject or I don't know, anything really. I think also where I want to be is not relying on any sort of source material and painting straight from imagination. I think it seems so much more freeing to me, you know, not being beholden to something in front of you, just being able to put out whatever you like, really. I think you know the work of Ruprecht von Kaufmann. He's one of my favorite painters. He uses storytelling in through imagery in such a interesting way, and it all just comes from his brain, straight from his brain. I love it.
Have you done much of this? Have you drawn from imagination? Is that somewhere you
Yeah,
play?
it's hard. It's really hard. Yeah, it's not easy at all. I think you really need a strong foundation of studying from life, I think, is the key. And yeah, just understanding the mechanics of the human form and just objects in general, I think he's clearly got such a strong visual library and strong understanding of the world and the way it kind of fits together and the way it can be translated on canvas or paper or whatever.
So you'd stay figurative, you wouldn't go more abstract, or what do
I
you think?
think it would, I don't know, I've always, again, going back to being younger and always drawing, it's always been people. I've always been drawn to that for whatever reason. I can't really give you a reason why. But I think if I was working from memory, I would hope it would become a bit more abstract. Maybe not within the technique itself, but more the kind of lack of faithfulness to reality, I think. Slightly more bizarre. I'd like to be an artist who's described as weird, I think. Their work is weird. I think that's quite cool.
Are you familiar with Kim Jong-il, an illustrator?
Yes.
Yeah, because I met him in 2016 and sadly he died last year, didn't he, in October? I
Yeah.
think it was last year. So yeah, I think of him quite often because his visual repository was so large, and yet he became quite playful and abstract with certain ideas because he was free to do so, but he was a bit of a phenomenon with that.
Total phenomenon. I've never seen anyone like him at all. It's insane. It's mind blowing. He was doing those live streams. I think it must have been like months before he passed, and people would type in the chat like, "Can you draw this?" And he would just do it straight away, and it's incredible. It's incredible.
No, he was very very funny and very humble and sweet guy when I met him. I'd done three drawings of him on MDF that I was intending on painting and cutting out in the opposite order, cutting out and then painting and giving to him as gifts. But I thought when I got to meet him, because I knew he'd be at this event, I wouldn't be able to approach him. I thought there'd be crowds and barriers. Turns out no one paid him any attention, and there was just a desk there. And he was in Leeds, and I think I just hyped him up in my head more than the public were aware of him at the time.
Yeah, I think that's the. I presume you found him via social media, right? That's the kind of effect of social media, I think. These people get kind of, they get hyped up for sure, and you have this view of them that is totally blown out of proportion very often. And then you meet these people and they're just like, you're just like the most normal person in the world.
He said to me, why didn't you bring these? Because I showed him the pictures. I said, I've done three drawings of you. I was going to paint them. He said, where are they? Why didn't you bring them? I said, I didn't think I'd be able to get close to you. I thought they'd be, crowds and, security. But he was just baffled. And I thought, yeah, okay, well, I'll buy a book off you. So that's the book that I bought of him. I'd pull it out, but it seems to be a bit of a foundational book at the moment, holding
Yeah,
up.
I can see. I think your whole room might come crashing down if you put that.
But that's Umphalos. I don't know if you know the Umphalos book, but it's the Book of Erotica that he did. It's very interesting, work, as you can imagine. He's got a crazy imagination, a lot of storytelling. Anyway, that's enough about Kim Jong-il. As much as I admire him, I just thought if you didn't know of him, it's one to look for drawing from imagination and having a rich understanding of anatomy and form and design. Did you say you have approached galleries, or is it just for group shows, or have you approached them and you exhibit in galleries anyway?
I've never approached with the intention of asking for a solo show. It's always been for, well, it's normally I've been approached for group shows, or I've submitted something. Again, I think because I'm not trained at all. I don't have huge connections to the art world directly. I think I'm not 100%, I'm not even 100% sure what the best way to approach a gallery for a solo show would be. And again, I have loads of them. I have like ideas of places I'd like to show, and I have them in a notes somewhere. But yeah, I'm not too kind of focused on going through the gallery system right now. I think it's I'm very happy to kind of quietly work away until I feel ready to emerge, so to speak. But again, if there was an opportunity that came across my lap now, I'd probably go for it.
I work with a really successful gallery in North Wales, and just to give you their point of view is that they get approached a lot, and their preference is to have emails, where you present six pieces, and ideally you will have visited the gallery beforehand so that you know what type of work they exhibit and have some knowledge about the space that you'll be inhabiting. I'm fortunate enough to be able to visit artists with the gallerist because I make films for him. So that's what I do, is every exhibition I make a film about, the production and promotion of the work. But I get to see how he selects shows, which is really interesting because from a gallerist perspective, he's looking at this massive body of work from this, different artists, and they'll be showing him everything. And he's trying to create a thread from landscape to some portrait, to some still life, and what works and what doesn't. You know, if there are sports images, he'll try to make sure there's enough of them to make it make sense, to give it context. Because if there's one sport and then there's lots of beach scenes, sport doesn't necessarily talk to the beach unless there is sport in the beach scenes. So that was how he balanced that, you know, when he comes to selecting the work. But it's been a real privilege to be able to see, one, the artist spaces, and two, how the gallerist considers conversations with the artist and the work that's going to go in the show. So yeah, I
Yeah,
wanted to.
I totally forgot to mention this, but I am kind of I have a representation for from First Thursday. Are you familiar with First Thursday?
I don't know First Thursday. Okay.
So this is a new this is quite a new platform. And they just help you link artworks with buyers, basically. It's essentially like a like an agent, but slightly different. So I've sold some or a work, I've sold a work with through First Thursday. And they help, yeah, reach new potential buyers and also just facilitate sales with existing ones as well. And I think the I learned some quite interesting stuff around this time. Signing up for them about the gallery system, and I might be this might be totally a totally false fact, so please don't take this too seriously, but it was something like two thirds of galleries in this country aren't actually profitable,
Cool.
which is quite astounding. I think I am slightly maybe part of the reason I'm not super on top of looking for a representation from a gallery to do a solo show is also the amount of money that they have to take to make a show financially viable for them, 50 to 70% or whatever it is, which is a lot, especially for someone who's like myself who's just starting out. So yeah, it's quite the gallery system is a bit intimidating, I think, for that
Yeah.
reason, as well as others.
So what's it got? First Thursday, did you say?
First Thursday, yeah.
And do they take a percent? How much percentage do they
They
take?
take a far smaller cut, depending on whether they're an existing buyer or not.
That's
So it would be 25%
okay, that's reasonable, isn't it?
to connect you with someone who you've not sold to before, which is far more reasonable,
Yeah.
and handle all the shipping and everything like that. Which
And
is
do they
great. Some really good artists on there. You should definitely check it
Yeah,
out.
yeah.
I'm gonna butcher his name, mate. Let me find it. Let me get it in front of me so I can. It's a Japanese artist called Kuta Sasai.
Okay, I'll have to look him up.
He's also represented. He's an incredible, prolific, like insanely prolific artist. Just his output is insane. But it's really beautiful work.
Yeah, well, I have that on the screen whilst we're talking. I'll always try to show what we're talking about for any viewers. But did First Thursday reach out to you? Or...
Yeah, they did. So that's kind of startup stage at the moment, I would say. And I'm planning on releasing maybe six or eight large works through them in the coming months.
Hmm.
So, you can find that on my Instagram bio. You'll find a link there to sign up. If you're interested in work or if you're just interested in knowing what I'm up to, what's coming out of the studio.
Yeah, so First Thursday, your Instagram I will have on the screen as well because I think it's a wonderful account with beautiful work on there. Do you have a website? Is there anything else we should
You have a website. Jackhewitt.co.uk. I have there's a few prints and like smaller works available for sale there as well, and all the necessary links to contact me are there as well.
Fantastic. Well, hopefully there'll be physical shows in the near future for people to go and see your work? Because as much as the gallery systems can be a bit fraught, at times when people can engage with the work in person, I know that it's, a real
Yeah,
privilege to do that.
it is a real privilege to see work in person. I saw the, don't know if you've been down to London to see this, but there was some UNU Glow stuff being shown in
No.
Mayfair, and I've got a book of his, which has like most of, it's a really good book. It's got most of his best stuff in there, but to see it in person was like unbelievable. Being able to get up close to it was, yeah, totally changed the way I see him as a painter. Because you look at the prints in the books or online or whatever, and it looks so like carefully measured, and like it looks so perfect. But actually going up close and looking at the paint surface, there's a lot of like looseness and perfection, which is really surprising. Because it's not, those are not words that you would associate with him as a painter at all. Yeah.
Yeah, nothing compares to it, does it really? To seeing
No,
it
not at all.
in person. Wonderful. Well, yeah, I really appreciate you being on the podcast. You've been very generous with your time. Thank you for
Thank you.
speaking to us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
Well, we hope you enjoyed that episode. If you can support the podcast by leaving a like or a comment down below, that'd really be great. But what we'd really like is if you're able to leave a review on the podcast channels, wherever you listen to it or download it, because that helps us get spread around the internet so that more people have access to us and able to see what we're making.
Also, follow us on Instagram, and we'd really appreciate it if you like and engage with our posts. Help get the podcast better known. Thanks for listening.